Oh, eight. No, we're not yet back in session. We're thinking about being back in session.
My guess is no one's on.
There was one person that was on now.
Welcome to CenturyLink conferencing.
Oh, no, now.
Please hold while I confirm your passcode. Thank you. Your passcode is confirmed. When you hear the tone, you will be the second person to join the meeting.
All right, we are back in session at 3:10.
Mr. Bullis, thank you for attending today. I'm from California. We don't really have enough information right now, so we're going to have to postpone.
I was actually going to suggest if you would like, we'll make sure Mr. Kraft is here the next time. You can reveal the questions that you have with him. I was not there at the time. I can understand your concern, sir. I do want to clarify for the purposes of I misheard when you talked about the individual you talked to at the studio. I heard Patella, it's Mr. Pavitt. Mr. Pavitt owned
right.
it, not Mr. Patella.
Right.
So the owner does not own that particular.
Oh, okay.
It was the owner who I talked to. It started with a P, so it all kind of ran together.
Okay, gotcha.
And that's what I heard, unfortunately.
First and foremost, we want to make sure right now there are no Arizona students in this program, in either any of these programs.
I will make sure that's the case.
You don't have a license. And so we have a responsibility to protect Arizona students, but it's kind of hard to protect them if you're not licensed.
Yes,
and you've got them out there anyway. So yes, we want to make sure that you don't have any Arizona students enrolled in these programs. And apparently we've had some Arizona students enrolled in these programs in previous years, and
yes,
understanding this currently is not any. So we want to make sure that we want you to come and verify that. We want you to also clarify for us, it seems like there's some conflicting information with regard to the amount of time that students actually spend in a what you call an externship site versus what the amount of time that they would have to spend studying online. So they get online material, but it seems like they don't do any of it until they meet with a mentor. And so it's pretty confusing in terms of how much of it is done at the externship site, as you call it, which we call a site. I mean, that's not like any externship relationship that we're familiar with in education.
It's a different model, yes, sir.
Completely different model, and so the terms get very confusing. So what we want to know is exactly how much time is typically spent online and how much of the learning actually takes place at this facility. In Tucson specifically right now, that's the only one we know of. And then the next question is, what are you going to do with regard to, you know, this 100-mile thing? So if you enroll a student more than 100 miles away from a Tucson facility, are you going to have a separate learning facility or externship site for every student, potentially, if they go, you know, beyond that? I'm not asking you, don't answer that right now, but that's what we're confused about. And then we would like to have a little more elaborate understanding of your coursework specific, and that goes along with what percentage of it is completed online and what percentage of it is completed at the externship site. And from the material that you presented, we really can't tell exactly the hours that students spend in various parts of the program. We'd like to have a much better understanding of that in the written material.
Do you have a syllabus that is given to the students?
Yes, ma'am. And it breaks down course by course, what they learn in each course.
We need that too.
And it should be in the package.
And one, just because I was the lead and I noticed this particular thing, I'll mention one more thing that I would have asked today had we had more time. You have a one-year payment plan where you charge an additional $1,000 as an administrative loan fee if a student agrees to a one-year payment.
That should have been changed.
That was supposed to be fixed.
Because
I said, oh, no way.
Yeah, if it's in there.
It's in multiple places.
It's in multiple places.
Then it's wrong because we did change it. When we submitted changes, we did change that thing. Got rid of that.
Okay.
So when you change things, that's go like through, then we actually see that they've been changed.
That happens a lot.
Ms. Stanfield made sure we understood that $1,000 a month.
Oh, no.
So the motion is that we delay action, we postpone action on this particular agenda item until we get some more information.
That'd be fine, sir.
And hopefully that's at our January meeting. Next meeting is January. Yes, we expect that you can make that deadline.
I appreciate that. I was going to ask if maybe that wouldn't be the best course is postpone it and try to get the information on the question that you're asking. Okay.
And if you could, if you do in fact have students, right now, we need their name and contact information,
okay.
And no more now.
I'll find that.
I mean, no more now. But no more.
If you ever had, should we get transcripts for the ones that have been?
Not a bad idea. That would work. Yes. So if you give us transcripts of those who have gone through the program and their contact information. And if you could provide this information no later than within the first week of January to include, let's say, 3 hard copies this time and electronic, and ensure that all revisions have been in all the copies.
Yes, ma'am.
Because I don't reread it again. I'm sick to death of it.
I understand. We don't want to reread it again either.
No.
All right, second. So we have a motion.
I'll second.
To postpone. We have a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed? See you in January with more information.
Thank you all very much.
All right. Do we need to remove any other shuffling?
I don't believe so.
Columbia. Got to do Columbia.
Oh, I'm sorry. We do need to do Columbia. Oh. We still have a form.
All right, we're running into a difficulty of having form if we don't reshuffle things a little bit. So the next case we will hear is a regular duty granting license application for Columbia College. Ms. Stanfield?
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the board. Columbia College is seeking a regular degree granting license to offer a selected number of courses within the business, Bachelor of Science in Business Administration, the BA in Criminal Justice, BA in Human Services, BA in Psychology, and BA in Bachelor of General Studies. This is the first application the State Board has had for offering only courses within the degree programs. I did consult with Mr. Talier, she was probably gone, sorry, regarding whether licensure was required. He agreed that it was. It was interesting, because I did not know this at this time either, that HLC does in fact recognize and approve these type of sites as course locations where they're offering less than 50% of the program.
Yeah, you don't need approval.
So,
But
it's still triggered licensure requirements here. Here representing the institution, I am assuming, I'm not sure which one, is Dr.
Musgrove.
And I believe April Longley is on the line, and
Terry Donald.
Okay. And your board member lead is Dr. Leck.
Good afternoon. Would you like to make an opening statement or?
Sure. About 14 months ago, we received a request from the City of Goodyear that went out to many institutions to bring a college to the City of Goodyear. We responded to their RFP, and they liked what they saw, and they invited us to Goodyear, and then we came here and started looking at Goodyear, the potential for us to operate and be successful here, and we agreed that we thought we could do this, and so we called them to be a partner with them and go through the process of getting approval to operate in Arizona. We do not, as you know, have approval to operate here, but we are currently operating in 12 states.
In the same model?
Yes. Same model meaning it is not a traditional campus with residence halls, athletic departments. We have the rest of our locations, other than our main campus in Columbia, Missouri, is working adults, evenings, weekends, online, taking courses, some of them full degree, and some of them just courses. Now, there was some confusion with our application here. I really don't want to muddy the waters with it, but we were trying to submit the application within the definitions of DOE and HLC for course and full-up program locations. What we will be offering here is courses less than 50% of the degree program on-site, but they will lead to full degree programs. We are working in partnership with the Maricopa County Community College District, where the students will come from their programs and transfer up to 81 hours towards our program, and we will provide the final 39 hours, which is 13 courses, which is what we said. We're looking to offer 13 courses, less than 50%, and we are not offering a full degree program. Does that make sense?
Yes, actually answers a huge question of mine. Because I just starting off, I didn't understand what then. So if the students enrolled in the, and I think they're in the major courses, I was like, what are they supposed to do? Are you expecting that they're going to go online?
No, they will finish with us with those three courses. They could go online because the courses are offered online as well.
So you're, okay, so let me just make sure I understand. Are you going to only accept students at this location that have either an associate degree or a large number of transfer credits? You're not going to take in a zero credit student and start them in these courses, correct?
That's correct. You can't do that.
You can't do that. So is that written in, and you guys have a lot of materials, but is that specified for these students that they?
It will be. The way it's set up is what we traditionally call a 2+2 partnership.
Yeah.
So if you come in with your transfer credits from the community college, then you need, the idea is to keep you at the community college for 81 hours versus 60, and then you transfer the other classes and those other courses in, and we'll just offer those courses. Your rotation of those particular courses, upper level courses that freshmen cannot get into the program, to complete the 4-year program.
Inevitably, you're going to face a student that wants to transfer early, though, and that's why I'm asking. Like, you're going to specify and say they either have to have an associate's degree or 60 credits or something, and whatever deficiencies they have after they get to you and take your face-to-face or go online and pick up, you will not offer new courses.
We will not offer those.
Whatever gap that was from 0 to 81, they could do with us online if they wanted. But, I mean, financially speaking, that would not be a good idea.
So this is a degree completion, basically.
Yes, it is.
So you already have the same exact model approved somewhere else.
Yes.
So the Department of Ed has already approved this program.
Yes.
Okay, and it's definitely less than 50% because I see that you are provisionally approved, and conditions of provisional approval is that you cannot offer a new program.
Yes.
And you cannot do additional location, which kind of felt like you were trying to pull a fast one against the department by setting up here when they expressly said they wanted to have limitations. But this is something that these programs have definitely been approved somewhere else.
Yes.
They don't
want to mess
with
the educational. No, we're not.
But which a program is different than a location. So if that says no locations, yeah. Then
well, it says additional location. The Department of Ed's definition of additional location
is 50%.
Is what?
50%.
Oh, so this is following under that trigger.
Which is why I couldn't decide if it's clever or sneaky.
We know the rules we're operating under, so we're not looking to establish anything outside of those rules.
Because we don't like sneaky.
No, we're not sneaky.
Have you done that recently to another location that since the PPA was there?
Their PPA is expires December 31st of 17,
yeah.
And it's date stamped September 26th of 16, so it's pretty new. And it's their conditional special conditions provisional is based on a open program review. So they would have had to have already had these approved prior to this PPA going into effect. That is correct.
The only one that we've done since then was in the state of Georgia, and it is a course location with the military, and we offer less than 50%. We offer about 12 courses there.
And are you notifying the department that you're doing this? You know, you're not through the EAP, so it's less than 50%, but...
Do we notify the Department of Education? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, I'm just asking if the department knows that you've done this.
Yes, they know that we're doing these things, and we send it to them, and usually they say, it's less than 50%, we don't care.
But usually, the less than 50% is you're teaching the program in California or online, and you're having a location that is going to teach less than 50% of that program.
Yes.
Whereas instead, yours is the whole nut because of transferring in.
Yes.
So I'm just curious of whether the Department of Ed has agreed that that meets the spirit of their regulation of less than 50%, or if you've come up with something more creative.
No. Is April still on the line?
What?
April.
April, are you still on the line?
Yes, I'm here. Sorry about that.
April, can you address the question about contacting the Department of Ed about our course locations?
About the course locations in the Department of Ed?
Yes.
Could you repeat the question closer to the phone? I just couldn't hear all of what was entailing further away.
Oh, please.
All right. Can you hear me?
I can. Thank you.
All right. So, historically, when a school has a location where less than 50% of the program is taught, they have the entire program offered either via online or at another location, and a portion of that full degree is taught at an auxiliary classroom or whatever it needs to be called, but less than 50%. In this instance, it sounds like the entire program consists of less than 50% of the program, so it's not really 2 plus 2 because that would be 50%. So it's a degree completion program. So my question was whether the department knows this is what you're doing since this provisional PPA was executed. Do they know that this is what you're doing and does it meet their rules?
We have been operating under the direction that the additional location for the Department of Education does not meet the same requirements as HLC. So HLC has been recognizing course locations, which is kind of not what they're doing anymore. They're really not recognizing them as course locations. It's either an additional location or then it's kind of up to the state to determine if that's going to fall under that HLC ruling. But for the Department of Ed, they really only are concerned with that more than 50% location.
Right, but the problem is that the more than 50% is more than 50% of the program. So if this entire program consists of 49.8% of what would normally be a degree requirement, I'm trying to figure out whether you're really offering less than 50% if your entire degree is really only whatever those number of credits are. I'm just trying to figure out whether you're splitting. I'm splitting hairs saying I'm wondering if you're doing it right, or you're splitting hairs and the department is not going to agree that you met their rules.
Okay, yeah. So for all intents and purposes, we do have additional locations and other locations that would offer these programs. So we might have a student that goes from a location to another one that happens, one happens to be an additional, one happens to be a course, and they could finish their degree. It would still be either that, 60 or 120. So we still consider them being full degree programs, wherever their credits are coming from. At least in our viewpoint. So while they might be able to finish with less than 50% of these course locations, it isn't really, 50 credits isn't really the degree program. It really is, by our standards, 60 for the associates and then 120 for bachelor's.
So, but normally, from what I've seen, when a less than 50% is offered at a location, that is not the location that issues the degree. So it would normally be, the school is in San Francisco and they're taking 25% of it in Phoenix. Phoenix does not issue the degree. So I'm just wondering if you have gotten legal clarity that you can issue the degree from the location that doesn't meet the department's definition of additional location. And instead is less than 50%.
Sure.
Are you saying versus them in Missouri? Like, are you saying versus granting the degree out of Missouri?
Yeah.
Where are you guys giving the degree?
We only grant degrees from Missouri.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
too.
Okay. Oh, Greece, Missouri.
Oh, that was.
So, and this
is. That was that first. I'm a little less stressed.
Oh, so we're not
the home. The home.
We should have started that first.
No.
All right.
Okay.
And I would think HLC would catch that too if they.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Every one of our. Every degree from Columbia College just says that there's no differentiation whether it was on military base, whether it was online, whether it was in Hawaii. It's Columbia College.
Oh, that's a good answer.
That's a good answer.
Okay. Okay. So I think we've covered that really well. On the, I don't even know what page is on that. Under the original application on page 3, it references CCNE, but I don't think the CCNE, you're just listing your accreditations because
right.
CCNE does not apply to this at
no,
all
it does not.
From what
it's
I saw.
Not.
Okay, and, but I'm just curious, if you guys have been around a long time, I would assume you would have had more than that, like ACBSP or anything like that. Do you not have any of those?
Well, no, we just, last year, we just divided into schools. We got deans. Other schools now. And part of her project is to get to the business degree accredited.
Okay. All right. So you guys are taking those.
We are working that.
Okay. All right. And I think I have, I think it's you. I have lots of questions about the org chart, but we'll get there. I did notice you guys are trending upwards in your default rate.
Yes.
And you guys have noticed that too, I'm assuming.
Yes.
I just wonder what you're doing to stop that, because you're actually getting pretty decently high. And for a traditional institution, I think that's more shocking, I think.
It is. We've hired an outside firm to help to capture that. And I think I'm not sure what link you've got there. Is it
from the Department of Ed's website? Has the Columbia College in Columbia, Missouri, the 2014 rate is 16. The 13 was 14.7. That's the appealed rate. And 12, FY12, it was 13, that was also the appealed rate.
And 12, we only hired Inceptia, a third-party organization, to help us with our default plan.
Yeah, you're not.
That's one of those things you don't want to be going this way.
Which is why we started to address it in 12.
Well, and I asked the question because does that have any effect on what it is you guys are doing? You know, you guys are opening all of these locations. You have a lot of locations. I mean, I was actually surprised. I went to school at Southwest Baptist University for 1 year, so I'm familiar with your area. But I was surprised that a traditional school like this was doing this. And so do you think that has anything to do with the default rate, no more trends?
No.
Or online?
Personally, what I think the default rate is that online, we put in all the measures to stop the fraud from online students. And we believe there's so many fraud rings that were out there. Once you start to capture those, that rate is going to go high. But now it should start trending in the other direction with captivity.
Conceptual.
Okay. I think it will start trending the other direction.
Okay.
We've had these locations around the country since the mid-70s. Mm-hmm. 2005, 2010, those areas, we were at single digits for our default rate. And we pretty much mirror community colleges because we do have open admission pretty close with most of our adult students locations. So once we started noticing it getting to double digits is when we started seeing what we could do. We tried to do it internally at first for a couple of years and we weren't having a lot of success. So we went to a professional third party organization.
I would just say make sure you're actively involved in that.
We are.
Because there are things academically you can do too, just to help stop that. Okay, so then I get into the courses that you guys are offering.
Yes.
And you're going to have to forgive me because I'm trying to mind it go between sections on what was happening.
Sure.
So I started looking at this, and then, and this is the totality of the courses that you guys want to offer, correct? This page, this accounting one through working with individuals. This page, this is right.
Yes.
Okay. So then I was wondering what we're looking at, and we're kind of over like in different degrees. So you're really asking, you know, for degree completion for the BSBA, the BAHS, the BA in criminal justice, right? There's like four of them here.
Right.
And they vary in credits. So the BSBA has 36 credits, but the Bachelor's of Criminal Justice, you are only offering 18 of those.
A lot of that's based on the transfer courses from the community college. When we bring in the course location, the intent is to have those students take those lower-level courses at the community college and then finish those with us.
But that would never even meet an upper division requirement. No,
it would not meet the upper division requirement, but it would meet the credits. So the credits would transfer in. So we still can only offer 39 hours. So that means they stay at home a little bit longer at the community college to get those courses. But it doesn't transfer in. You still got to get our residency requirement.
What is it? What's your residency?
30.
Okay. But and what's your upper division?
You are right. It's 39. Mm-hmm. Those are the courses we're going to offer in seat. The rest will be done online.
Okay. So they'll meet their upper division through online?
Yeah, they'll do 39. Okay. Yeah, okay. 81 they bring and 39 with us and all upper level.
Okay. I just wanted to verify that they would complete their... Okay. In here we have numbers of faculty. I'm assuming 72 refers to your total faculty back in Columbia?
Yes, full-time tenured faculty at Columbia College.
Tenured faculty. Do you count non-tenured faculty in that 72? Or this is just tenure track?
They're tenure track, sorry.
Okay. And then, how many full-time faculty are you planning on having here?
None.
Okay. So who's in charge of the academics here?
Columbia College in Missouri. Here's how we work. We have one curriculum. Mm-hmm. We have one dean of academics or vice president that handles the academics of the college. So every location is getting the same program throughout the country. So all of the faculty that are hired here, we will identify them, but they will be approved through the dean of those schools.
Back home. Totally
same
understand
criteria.
That. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But when there's an academic issue, and this relates to a lot of my questions regarding services and stuff, who's the head academic person dealing with these students? So say there's plagiarism or whatever, I don't know, code of conduct. Who's dealing with them?
They will start with a campus director that we'll hire here.
Are they an academic?
Yes. Well, they're an administrator. However, it will go through the faculty, through home campus. So everything is done here.
Okay.
So your director will handle the initial complaint or issue and then forward it to home campus.
Okay, so let's play out code of conduct, for example. Say one of your Arizona students is cheating, mm-hmm. and they get turned in for code of conduct somehow. I'm not sure what your process is exactly. Mm-hmm. And it goes back there. How does the student participate in that? Do they do it by phone? Do you do this often?
Yes,
how does that work?
This happens often, and it's by phone.
Okay.
We have one student affairs. We'll take care of that issue. However, from the student's standpoint, the student will start with the local campus director or faculty, and the faculty reports it. Then it goes to the director. Then the director in turn calls home campus. Then they set up a meeting between student affairs and that student.
Okay.
To resolve the issue.
Okay. I'm not sure how I feel about no full-time faculty at all, but I'll leave that there.
We don't have, just for the record, Columbia doesn't have any full-time faculty at any of its locations.
Anywhere else? And HLC's never had a concern about that?
They're worried about the credential of the faculty member, not whether they're full-time. In honesty, a lot of our faculty are full-time in another institution and teach for us in the evening.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Okay. I was curious. So you have a focus visit in 2016. What was the focus visit covering? What were they looking at?
Focus visit from HLC?
Uh-huh.
It was... We did our every 10-year visit, which was in 2012.
You did the assurance argument.
Yep. And then between that, we get, because we have locations around the country, we get a multi-location visit. That's what that was.
All right.
They came out and they visited 10 locations.
Okay.
And then did a report. The report was favorable with no write-ups. Whatever the right word is for that. No problem.
They're fine.
No findings. Findings.
Okay. All right. So there's no follow-up. Okay. Good. Okay. Okay, so I had a question. So I'm assuming, and Trish, you would know this way better than I would, but when the PPA is about to expire, all of that is already in the works to get renewed, correct? Or
hopefully.
It was submitted on September 16th.
Okay.
You're talking about there's a reapplication date there.
Right, so...
That's what was submitted September 16th. All the findings that we had to respond to had been previously submitted.
Okay, no, that's two separate things.
Yes.
So there's the electronic application, which is where you're called the EAP, and the resulting output is the PPA and the ECAR. And so your PPA, Program Participation Agreement with Department of Ed, is scheduled to expire in December, December. And so you have to submit a complete application by no later than September 30th.
Yes.
So that's one thing. Separately from that, you had a program review, which is when the Department of Ed goes out and visits, and they were not happy with what they saw, and that's why you got the PPA.
Yes.
And when we asked for a copy of the program review, your staff gave us an explanation of the process, which we do understand.
Right.
That was nice for you to tell us, but we understand the process. But we want to know what those findings were that resulted in, you know, getting a provisional PPA. And she said, well, there wasn't a final report yet, but if you've given answers, you did get a report to which you responded, and then the final determination letter hasn't come out yet. But the actual findings that resulted in this, not that they couldn't have put you on provisional without giving the report, but I understand they did give you the report. And you responded.
We responded to questions that they had. I mean, they wanted data, they wanted these ideas, those things. April is the one that's been working that more than us, so I probably would defer to her if I'm not being bothered.
Yeah.
The what?
Then you could to the office.
That was just the audit.
Okay. So, April, if you could unmute for a minute.
Yep, I'm here.
Okay. And it's fine if your children want to help. I'm sure they can give us some good input here. What was the date of the program review visit?
I do not have that date. I'm actually still coming up to speed on some of those things, but my understanding is that the program review visit, they haven't given us the findings on how to definitively address and compile their final response and our final response.
Okay. So you don't know when the visit occurred?
I don't know.
Just so you know, April... this app was done by her predecessor. April just started, 3 weeks ago?
I started in July, and I took over for Misty about 3 weeks ago. That's
right.
Correct,
right.
Yes.
Misty was...
So I can definitely get you any answers that you might need and feel as though, you know, we need to send them on to you. That's perfectly okay as well, so I can keep notes on that.
Yeah, I guess normally, when you have a program review, when you get the report, you provide a copy to Ms. Dan.
Well,
you get the final determination letter.
I only get the final.
Only the final. Okay. It's just because whatever sins they think you have resulted in them putting you on provisional. So it just would have been nice to know if any of those things were things that, as a state board, would concern them.
Sure.
If it was you calculate R2T4 wrong or something. Then obviously that's just something with the feds. But
so I had the same questions, just not in her detail. So I don't know what to do about that. But so I'm going into the next thing I have is program course of study forms. A lot of my questions had to do with the degree completion part, and that's what I assumed, but I wanted to make sure I understood what we were doing here. But I couldn't, you know, I talked about the math I was doing earlier, so I have more math, right?
Yes.
And so I'm trying to figure out how we get to 128 weeks in length and 32 months in 4 years. 4 years I totally get, but you're assuming all of the prior work the student has done. It's not 4 years here, 4 years here on their in Goodyear. But I couldn't figure out the model. I was trying to do this to figure out the model. How are these students going to school? Are they doing semesters? Are they summer off? What happens here? One course at a time?
I asked the same question earlier this week, because I was doing the math and it wasn't working for me either.
Okay.
It's 32 months is 8 months per year. So that is two semesters, which for us is four terms. And then the summer is whether the student goes in the summer or not. So four semesters, we have all of our hours, our semester hours. We do 8 week sessions, so 2 8 week sessions makes up a full semester where you get four classes in 16 weeks. So that's where the 32 is 4 years, 8 months.
Okay.
For each year.
So I totally get that. And I think Terry's familiar with non-traditional students and back-to-back eights in a semester. That's how Terry and I met. My question is, when you do the refund, you're doing the refund per course, though, even though they're in a semester?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Well, yeah, I think you would have feelings about that. As she, me. Okay, so that helps me understand that. And you don't think that you're going to have retention issues with the Arizona students if they're not going in summer and they have that big four-month break? Have you not seen that in locations?
No, we do have students that go through, but really our history is working adults stop in and out a lot. These are not 18 to 20-year-old students. They're typically people that have come back to school. They'll stop out to have a baby. They'll stop out because they had to work two jobs. They'll stop. 40% of our students are affiliated with the military. Somebody will deploy for a year and they'll stop out. So we have lots of stop in and stop out. So, I mean, does it affect the retention rate? Yes. Do we have students graduating every year? Every 4,500 students get awarded degrees last year. So I wouldn't think the Arizona students would be any less likely or more likely to have a different adult pattern than the students we have around the country.
And if a student stops out in the second eight, does that cause financial aid issues, or do you just have a return to lender if they're doing two eights back to back in a term? I can't remember. Is that there's financial aid stuff, right?
Yes. So if you have a semester with two 8-week modules, you have to follow the module rules. And if they don't take a leave, then you would have to withdraw them. And if you take a leave, you have to meet the Title IV requirements for it, which may be different than your academic. Like if they're going to be gone for a year, you could give them an academic leave, but you couldn't give them a financial leave. Do you know that you don't, or you're just saying that?
No, we don't give them academic leave for a year.
You don't, okay. So you have, if they're going to be gone a year, they have to withdraw and then reapply?
After a year.
Yes, sir.
There is a program form for the Bachelor of Arts in Psychology. There's a program form in here for a Bachelor of Arts in Psychology. And none of the courses listed on that course list trailed back to a Bachelor of Arts in Psychology unless I missed something.
It's on there.
On the course list? There?
Yeah. BA in Psychology.
Yeah, but you're saying there's no courses.
There's no courses.
No. Oh, there's no courses.
No, there's no. That's what I read. BA, BSBA, BAHS, Bachelor of Criminal Justice, and there was four. None of them are psych. So then I didn't know why there was a program for them, because they can't complete anything at this location that would help them, except for maybe electives.
But I think you do it online, but you're right.
So I just didn't know if this was in here erroneously, which I assumed it was, but.
Terry mentioned that there was a blurb about your program review contained within your audit. So for those of you who are new to the school, and those of us who are trying to figure it out, in 2015, you received a program review for the year for the through the 15-16 year. As a result, the program review was determined the college awarded direct loans based on this with the whole standard academic year, etc. So you've not had that report yet? Because it says that they expected you to resolve everything that they had found while you're waiting for the report, apparently, according to your auditor. So is that what you're saying? You gave things back and forth? So if they said
they would ask us and say, hey, we'd like to have this data. Can you provide this for us? And so we would get the data on those students for this many years, and then we would provide it to them. What they were doing with that data, they didn't really say. They said, this is what we want. And we would give it to them.
Did they have you return funds on any students that you know?
No.
Not yet. Your auditor thinks that you're going to have to do that.
We think that as well.
Okay.
My next one was the refund schedule. And so the way I interpret this is you can withdraw in week one for 100%, nothing else.
That is very strict. I am very nervous about that. We have I'm familiar with 8-week courses, and it's like a 3-week refund. Don't you have problems with that?
You know, we have different states have different requirements. The military, we have to prorate it throughout the terms if they withdraw from the class of the military. So different states have different requirements, but that's the standard. That is the standard. If you want to withdraw the first week, you have the first week to see if you want to make the class or not. Now, you can also get an excuse withdrawal. So if there's a medical issue, then that course will be prorated, or it will be, I understand, refunded depending on the issue. If it's a known issue prior to, then you work out a prorated 8-week payback period. But if it's an accident or something, I can't long hold the class, you're going to get a refund for a refund back.
The difference between the withdrawal and the withdrawal is huge.
So how many student complaints do you get saying that you gave that person a refund because she lied to you and you didn't give me a refund and now I'm left owing all these loans and I owe you money and
you have to get a lot, especially online, if you apply this online. I can't imagine.
I don't know that we do.
I will follow her. I do appeals, and I'm telling you, I couldn't put this into place. I'm a little bit worried. I just want it on the record that that's very strict. I don't know of another institution I've ever seen that strict of a refund, just for the record.
And I expect that we'll see you in front of the complaint committee, and believe me, that's even less fun than these meetings.
So I did have a lot of questions regarding services. So, for example, I'm not sure how your Title IX program works, but if you had a Title IX at the Goodyear campus, can you tell me how that would be dealt with?
Yes, we have a representative for all the locations. He actually sits in my office. The interns work with the home campus. We still go through student affairs, just like they would be at the home campus. They have the same processes to cover all the issues. So they're not left out here. It's a formal written complaint. It goes to our deputy, who in turn work with the Title IX coordinator at home campus.
So, but who would be at Goodyear campus to be trained to investigate? Or are you going to send out an investigator from home campus?
We would send a representative from my office out to investigate.
Okay.
And then he would report back to home campus.
Okay, and so all that works that way? Do you have an online library and stuff? Is that what they're using to do all their homework? Okay, all right. And so their appeals are heard from the main campus? They submit to the system?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Okay, and then I was just, the org chart I was interested in. So I see that you guys, so you have essentially three colleges, mm-hmm. right, that have three deans.
Right.
And then you have online separate.
Mm-hmm.
Does the programs that are offered through the colleges are the same as what's offered online?
Yes.
Which is the same as what the Goodyear students are going to use?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I did find it interesting, and I was just curious, Title IX reporting up through HR is very strange to me. Since HR doesn't generally deal with students, how does...
It's our Title IX coordinator works for the HR director.
Huh, still interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen that. Oof. That was lucky. Oof. Okay. Let's see. I looked at the lease you have for the new one, the new facility, and if I read this correctly, it's $96,000 each year over 7 years. Is that correct?
I'm sorry.
Am I reading that correctly? Annual rent, $96,600, and duration of lease is 7 years?
Yes.
Do you know how long it's going to take when you run this campus before you guys break even?
If you do historically, like other places, I mean, that's all we really have to go on. We're probably looking at year 3 to 5.
Okay. All right. I'll let the finance guys ask any more questions than that. That's about all I can do.
Yeah,
And then that you guys included a workforce thing with some programs highlighted, but I didn't understand how any of these related back to the programs that you're talking about enrolling for. So it had like business management, marketing, or that one, but computer and information sciences and support services was highlighted. Health professionals was highlighted, so I didn't quite understand. Is there something I'm supposed to be looking at in this? Was there something I was supposed to understand from this?
Is that from the city of Goodyear? I mean, is that their brochure?
Maricopa County College District 5-year award trends in workforce degrees and certificates, but there was highlighting that didn't relate to the degree, so I didn't know if I was missing something.
You're not.
Okay, it was just there for decoration. Got it.
That's the largest growth.
She's saying it's the largest growth, but it's not related to the degree. It's not related to what they're asking course to offer, so I didn't know what I was doing. Okay.
I see what you're saying.
And then my last thing, and then I'll share. Your enrollment projections for the first year is 42, and your second year is 70. You're offering a lot of courses.
Sure.
So your class size is going to be pretty tiny.
Only if all of them go. I mean, these are programs that we think will do well here. We do not know how they're going to do here. I mean, you could get those courses could just be all business that you're not getting any interest in the others. Those numbers are based on other startups that we've had and how many they would have had in a similar amount of time. Now, we will have it. When we put those numbers together, I believe what we're told, Mr. Terry, you kind of have to step in here if I say this wrong, that those are the number of first seat classes, and a lot of the students will transition to online, which is what we find happens all over the country. They come for a bit, and then they go to online because it works them better with their lifestyle, meaning their fast-paced lifestyle or whatever their family. So we get to a point where it'll build up, but you really won't explode with seat classes, and typically our classes are 8 to 15 students.
Okay. Is there a minimum start that you would start a class with? Do you have a minimum number?
Five, typically.
Five? Okay.
But if they're taking different courses when they sign up, they're taking different courses. If you have 40 students, and you have a lot more courses than that available, just like the earlier school we talked to, how the students going to be able to complete their program? If you're not offering a course, you don't have enough bodies in it, and then they can't complete, so what they don't want to do online.
This is a conversation we have with every student when they start. As we talk about scheduling, we talk about making the classes, and you know, the more we grow it, the better chance you have of making the classes. I mean, we have some of our locations that offer 20 to 25 classes every session, and they make every session. But with a new startup, yes, it will be difficult to offer all those classes with only 40 students. But you're only going to offer the classes as you have the students. So if I get 10 students in the psychology program, we will offer the psychology classes, even though we're not offering that program through the term.
Yeah, thank you. So there's a whole other problem.
It's almost like a cohort as they come in, because we'll know those students come in from the community college, what their needs are already. We'll know those 13 classes. So it's a rotation as they're coming in. So it's pretty easy, and we've done a lot of startups, and we'll have campuses, locations with three classes, and we'll have three classes. But those three classes, that's the majority of our students, the bigger population. I mean, they'll also get a chance to see an annual schedule to see where those courses come in and where they fit in. So if they don't want to take an online class, we don't force them to. We'll run a class with two people in it, just to get those students through. Because for us, the most important thing is the graduate. It's not that current student, it's the graduate. Because when they graduate, they're going to talk about our program. If they don't graduate, if they don't take care of them, they're going to talk about our program.
But a class size of two, you have to agree, is not a good learning environment for anybody. Mm-hmm. And the second thing is if the curriculum is properly scaffolded, you can't feed into that either. So you can't improve class size.
It is not scaffolded.
And it's not the norm.
It is unusual, especially in a degree program.
There are very few of our upper-level classes that require another upper-level class as a prereq. So as we're going through the program, you take these courses. And if somebody joins in the third semester, and there's a class going on, they can start right in with that class because they've already had all the lower level classes and all the introduction, the college algebra, the accounting one, the accounting two, those kinds of things they already have. And now you're going to take principles of management, which the only prerequisite we have for that is introduction to management.
So that's a lower level class that they've already really transferred in. So most of our upper level classes are that way. There's very few of them that have another upper level class that is a prereq for it, other than our capstone, obviously.
Check that one if you do ACBSP, because I think for business that'll be challenging not to not have that scaffolding there, just FYI. I'm done.
And again, as another plug that we don't want to see with the complaint committee, that would be a complaint if a student feels like they signed up, understood they could get done a certain amount of time, and then the courses they needed were not available, we would be seeing you, and we don't want to.
Yeah.
It's not that that committee's not friendly or anything, we just
prefer no, I understand.
It's not friendly, actually. All right.
It's not.
And if a student goes into our program full time and they come with EAD 1, we're talking about 14 months to completion. So we run 13 classes, take a capstone out, that's 12. You run two classes every session, and you just keep rolling. So every year, the 12 classes are offered.
Just keep an eye on that, because we don't want to begin with things. Know the mayor of Goodyear, but obviously is excited about you coming.
She's excited about hearing the result of this.
Yeah, it's funny because I live in the West Valley. I learned so much just by reading their thing about the West Valley. Okay.
And I will say that there's 12 states that we've gone through this with, and they have the same concerns that you're sure. And they come and they visit and they inspect, like I'm sure you will. And we haven't had any problems.
I think we have better questions.
Well, apparently not.
I know, right? We're running the mill.
That covered, actually, the conversation, you covered everything I had. Surprising.
Anyone That's not normal.
Oh, no. I interspersed.
You're good?
Yes.
You're good? Right. Jim, Jim doesn't have any?
Yes, we assume he is.
So then, shall I motion to approve a regular degree granting license application, that the institution maintain their bond, and that we get a copy of the final DOE report when it's released.
The who report?
The final DOE report.
Program. Okay.
And
then DOE is Department of Energy. We'd like the Department of Education.
Oh yes, sir. And then a revised copy of the new PPA, which I assume will start after the December whatever deadline.
And it's possible that because you have an open program review, it's going back for 2 years now by the time this is over, don't be surprised if you are you end up getting month-to-month approval from the department, and they may not give you a new PPA until a decision is made about the program review. They may, but we've seen often if you have an open program review, they will just have you go month-to-month until the program review is resolved. So if you haven't recently sent a message saying, just checking in, is there anything else you need from us, it would behoove you to do so.
Okay. And it's part of the motion, just communicating that to staff, to Terry, so that we will know eventually.
Okay, so we have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Does the school agree to the stipulations?
Yes.
All right. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Congratulations.
Thank you.
Welcome to Still Roasting Arizona.
It was 36 degrees when we left Missouri. So this is pretty nice.
It'll be 20 when we get back.
Yeah.
Don't miss that. No, 4:30. But I wanted to, if I had to step out, it would be the one. I'm sorry, I'm leaving my mind.
Gotcha. All right. The next one, going back in order, and we are not going to change again. It's a conditional to regular education program license renewal for technology testing.
Yes. Madam Chair, members of the board, at your October 2016 meeting, the board approved the conditional vocational program license for technology testing, Inc., with stipulations to post a $50,000 surety bond, and several revisions were required to the catalog and fees. The surety bond and the required revisions were received in November. We are now seeking renewal, conditional to regular vocational program license renewal. Here representing the institution is Adam Puffenberger, president, and your board member lead is Mr. Jacob.
Okay.
Hello, sir. How are you?
Doing good. How are you doing?
Doing fine. Would you like to make an opening statement?
Yeah, my CFO, I do apologize. My CFO was supposed to be here. She is ill. It seems like he's a pretty financial heavy, and so I'll do my best to answer any financial questions, but I'll most likely have to go back to her and give you an answer later in the future.
Okay. Can you tell me about this year so far? No students.
No students, that's correct. When we originally got our license, conditional license, we had two instructors. Shortly thereafter, one of our instructors left, and that left us with one instructor. There are only about 20, 25 crane schools in the country, so it's very difficult to find an instructor. And so this instructor that we have is taking on continuing education students. That's the majority, or that's all of what we've been doing.
Is that what that other revenue is when
yes.
you're on your line?
Okay, yeah.
Because I was wondering I forgot what it was.
Then. Yeah, so then we have sister companies. One's Marco Crane. They hire or they send out cranes with operators, in-house operators. And typically when we go on jobs, we don't do the rigging, actually hooking up the equipment or signaling. And so we rely on the customer to do that. And we ask, do you have your CCO card? They say, no, we don't have it. Then we tell them, hey, we have a school. You know, you've been doing this for a long time. It's good to have a CCO card because it's going to be required here pretty soon. Same with Bear Rentals, another sister company, Martin Equipment, does Bear Rentals cranes without operators. And we talk to the customer, hey, you obviously have a crane operator. Is he CCO certified? No, in November 2017, now it's November 2018, that's going to be required nationwide. So we have the continuing education we bring in. And then also that instructor also doubles as a crane inspector. He'll go out and look at cranes, inspect them. Every year OSHA requires that you have an annual inspection. So that has nothing to do with the school, but that is revenue bringing being brought in by that company.
So we wouldn't consider that tuition revenue, or the continuing education, I guess.
No.
Okay.
That's not licensed.
Right.
Yeah. And my apologies, correction on the site visit, it was not conducted.
Well, I'm done. Okay.
No, there weren't student records, and that's what we do right. at this point in time. So.
But they have a very large facility based on their catalog.
It is very large. Yeah, we have the one site where we do it's a trailer where we do the school teaching in the trailer. But then the actual physical moving the cranes. Obviously, we have giant tower cranes, 120 feet, and then mobile cranes in a large facility to do that.
And so what's the plan then? No students.
Correct.
Are you trying to change up the marketing philosophy or what's the operational plan moving forward?
We've had discussions on marketing. We obviously need another instructor before we can do that. We have a gentleman that is CCO certified. That's the national organization that certifies you as a crane operator. He has both his written portion, which is like the safety rules and regulations, OSHA, mm-hmm. ANSI, and then we have the operational portion. He has both of those, but before you can actually give CCO examinations to other people, CCO has to run a workshop, which you attend, and they only do that twice a year.
Okay.
And so we're waiting for that. Once we get that, we'll have two instructors that can take the load, specifically tower crane. That'll be big for us because we're the only, that I know of in Arizona, the only company or the only school that owns a tower crane on site. If you want to go to another school, say in California, they actually take you to a working construction zone and teach you how to be a tower crane operator on the construction site, which is, number one, difficult to get a general contractor to agree to that, and then number two, nerve-wracking for the students, their first time up at a tower crane. So we think there'll be a lot of revenue coming in from that, and that's what this instructor is mainly going to do is the tower crane portion.
Are you getting interest from people for this?
We are. For the tower crane, yes, we have to
okay.
turn them away.
And so you're putting them off saying, we've got to get this other person
yeah,
certified?
Yeah, what we do, we say we don't have anyone CCO certified, we can't do that for you. Tower Crane School of Phoenix, I believe, is another person that will say you can go to them.
That's really all I had. I mean, it's a large holding company. It's a little confusing, but people are...
So there's tech testing, there's
yeah,
four sister companies, and then that's all up into one holding company.
Right, and so some of the financials were a little confusing as far as the retained earnings and what money is going in and what money is going out. I don't know if Dr. Mittman could be any comments on that. I don't know. But just that.
I mean, just to go, there were some discrepancies in the application and in the financial statements.
Okay.
So I think that Terry or staff printed them out. Did she share that with you? Or
she told me there were some discrepancies. I provide that to our CFO, and that's when she brought it back to me.
From the material standpoint, you know, it doesn't change the overall picture of the financial picture. It's the only question that I have is for TTI, TT, you don't have any tuition revenue, you've got other revenue this fiscal year. Mm-hmm. How did you, you increased your expenses by double?
We increased the expenses by double? I'd have to check with that. I know that we are trying to get some new cranes in. We only own the tower crane. The other mobile cranes, we have to rent out hourly from our sister company.
Right. So just looking at last year, your expenses, your operating and selling expenses were about $310,000. And then this year, they're $413,000.
I would have to ask our CSO. Kind of,
with less revenue. It's a curiosity, but given the interlocking companies and the strength of the overall financials,
it appears you made all the revisions to the catalog that we suggested last time, so thank you. I checked those. At least they look like they were all done. Anybody have any other questions or comments?
I do. We usually make this as a suggestion, not a requirement, but I would just like to make a plug for it. If you have high school diploma, if you put or equivalent, just to cover homeschoolers, because it's like this weird fine line of whether it's truly a high school diploma or it's the equivalent of one, just so you're not excluding someone you probably might want to have. So if you just put high school diploma or equivalent, that will cover GED, it'll cover homeschool. If they come from a school that has state a state equivalent. Test, yeah. And that way you don't have to like list it all. You can just say that, and it's sort of common terminology. There was a note that there might be a problem with the grievance, but it looked okay to me, so I wasn't sure why.
It looked like it was, I didn't see human resources referenced.
I think the human resource part was taken out, but they have, you go to the original person you had to complain with, and if that doesn't work, you go to president.
Yeah.
And that seemed okay to me.
Okay.
That was one of the suggestions
you
made.
Yeah, yeah, made a change. Like, and this is just sort of funny. 79.8 hours is the program.
I wrote that too.
Thank you for the giggle.
I'm okay. Like, well, but why is a course 0.3?
Yeah, I know.
Why don't you just go 5 or 6?
I actually did the math and said, does that actually come out to like
40? Hand signals.
I have
take,
I've never seen that before. Hour. We split
the
an hour.
The left had a big portion. He was the person, and he gave me those numbers, and so
78 hours and 48 minutes.
You better be down to the 20th. That's 20 minutes, isn't it? So it better be 5 hours and 20 minutes.
No, it's 48 minutes. 78 hours and 48 minutes.
I was talking about the individual class. It's 5 hours and 20 minutes, and not one more, not one less.
Just need some interesting facts at 410.
But that was not as good of a giggle as your initial interview checklist.
Okay.
Does the potential student have experience within the industry, have experience operating heavy equipment, have the ability to communicate effectively, have active listening skills? Guess what? 2 out of 3 are good. So if you have experience, you have experience with heavy equipment, but you don't listen, you cannot communicate, you can go to your school. That does not sound good.
No, when you put it that way, no, it does not sound good. Which would probably be one of those.
I think what they were hoping for was that you would have to have numbers 3 and 4. You can communicate, you can listen,
yeah.
But it's okay if you didn't have experience. But as it's written.
No, I understand. I will make a note of that.
But thank you for the giggle. I really, between the 48
that,
minutes.
Especially so you can.
And that part. And so we have to share. Okay.
We have to find something joyous.
We have to. So. I'll tell you what. And on the EA, it's the catalog. Oh, it's attached there. The books and supplies, you have them listed under the program information. Then you don't mention anywhere if they are on the EA, if they are refundable or not refundable. So you just need to mention if they're not refundable, because once they are, given they can't be taken back, it's fine. Just say within your refund policy, books and equipment are not refundable, or they're refundable for return unopened, like whatever the deal is.
Yeah.
Add that. And then somewhere it says, I guess I changed my mind. I didn't really like how it was worded, but I decided that was just my opinion.
We are progressing. We are getting progressive with that.
Yeah. But in the refund policy number E or BE,
You say that the refund would be due within 30 days of the dismissed student receives a written notice approval of last day of attendance, date of cancellation, whichever is applicable. And really, it ends up being you should just, the refund is based on the date of determination. So usually people have something that says you're determined to be withdrawn when any of those things happen. Just having the statement, whichever is applicable, I might say, well, I feel the LDA is applicable, even though I didn't tell you for 30 days. So you might want to have it as two separate statements. One that says the date of termination is these things, then the refund is made within 30 days of the date of termination. It would just be clear. And on the books and supplies, in your catalog, you say on page 12 that they're not refundable. So it's probably that they're not, but you'll need to add that to the EA.
Okay.
That's all I have. My slipping got me make something.
No.
No.
I'm like, are you sure?
You're like, please hurry. We might be able to finish by the time I have to leave.
Okay. Anything else?
Yeah.
All right. I'll make a motion to approve the conditional to regular vocational program license renewal for technology testing with stipulation to maintain a $50,000 surety bond. And notify staff when student records are available for inspection.
Since we were unable to do the, or there wasn't a point in doing the site inspection because you didn't have any students, when you do and there are records available, you need to let us know and we'll come out and check them.
Okay. And then also when the new instructor is ready, I'll submit something to them.
Great.
Second motion.
Okay. We have a motion second. Do you accept the stipulations?
Yes.
All right. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Those opposed?
Good luck.
Is this how fast can we go now? 15 right. minutes.
Next, the supplemental license application for change of ownership, Arizona Medical Training Institute.
Madam Chair, members of the board, Arizona Medical Training Institute has been licensed by the board since October 2007, and Mr. James Dillard was the sole owner. AMTI also offers several other programs, caregiver and CNA, that are not under this board's jurisdiction. Long day, yeah. The new owners, S&S Training LLC, also owns the Arizona Academy of Medical Services, which have been licensed by the board since November of 2014. Both institutions' licenses are in good standing, and S&S is seeking approval of the change of ownership of ATMI. And Ms. Castillo will be the new administrator, and your board member lead is Mr. Dugan.
Thank you. Would you like to make an opening comment?
Yes, thank you. This is the first time I've been before a board meeting here at Arizona Post-Secondary. I've been to the Board of Nursing there, but this is the first time here. And I've been looking forward to it all week, and I really have been. And so I've learned so much, and it's been an eye-opening experience, and I appreciate all that all of you do to as an advocate for the public, for the students, so thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Seale. I don't really have any concerns. What we really look for in a change of ownership is typically the strength of the financials for the acquiring institution. In addition, look at whether it's an asset purchase or not and what that implies, as well as any changes that the new ownership intends to make. It appears that you don't intend to make any changes to the curriculum, which is pretty critical to us. As a matter of fact, you appear to be just willing to, at least in the beginning, go along with what is already there. And so I don't have any concerns with regard to any immediate changes that you might make. And I'm quite impressed with your financials. And so it looks like you've got a very strong financial organization. So I don't have any questions. I'm sure that there are some small issues that might come up, but I didn't examine, because you're going to stick with the same catalog and enrollment agreement.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're looking at our tuition as well. So we're looking at some tuition. We're putting in a new software system for improvement in tracking and being able to be better bean counters. and then also improvement. That software system, campus management system, also will improve the e-learning or online aspect of our program as well, hopefully strengthening that for the students. It's pretty good now, but we're hoping to make it a little better. So,
how many students do you have?
Currently enrolled, about 110.
The campus management software is a very big package, so there will be a lot of modules that maybe you're not ready yet, so I assume that you're gearing up for growth. It's hardy. Okay.
Especially in the CNA program. That's our highest demand, is in the CNA program.
And that's not ours.
No.
Nope.
Okay.
That's why she's going to the board nursing.
Mm-hmm. The statement dated 6/1/17 had a 90-day transition period for the owner, and by the time we're meeting, that's gone. So are you on your own now? You okay?
She looks like she's okay.
I'm only 25 years old. This is what has happened.
I'm 27.
Since June 1 to now, this is what happened. This is what's happened.
She's 12. Okay. I have a couple of questions on the refund policy that honestly must have slipped by us last time. It sounds like when it's an AMTI-initiated withdrawal, it says you would give a full refund at any point in the training. Do you really want to do that? You can. But usually, whether it's student-initiated or school-initiated, it would be subject to the same percentages. But if you want to say, we decided we don't want you as a student, therefore we're giving you all your money back, who are we to say? But I didn't know if you knew that was unusual. So think about it.
Seems unusual to me.
Hi. Just because I've been here so long, there was a complaint that Mr. Dillard dealt with for many, many, many years, and that policy was probably implemented as a result.
Okay.
So I'm not totally surprised.
Well, but the way it's worded is weird. It says a full refund at any point in the training, but then later it says... but it's subject to the refund policy, so it actually was a little bit hard to follow. So I would like you to look at it, and if you're going to give a full refund if you kick them out, then take off that part that says, but it's also subject to the refund policy, or take out
okay.
that it's full, because it's one or the other. You're
yes.
giving the full refund or you're not. So you probably tried to revise it because of that complaint and didn't quite follow through.
And that complaint's still going on.
Oh, seriously? And then for the canceled course, it doesn't sound like you're given a full refund, and you should. If the course is canceled, then that would be entitled to the full refund. And then the three-day refund, you didn't word it the same way as the Arizona policy, and it was a little hard to follow, but basically the Arizona rule is like an ifs and else statement. If the student... decides to cancel the enrollment within 3 days, it doesn't matter if they've started. 3 days, free and clear, you have to give the money back. So if you enroll them on day one of the school and they quit on day three, too bad, so sad for you. You need to give them all their money back. And the way you worded it sounded like you won't, or the wording so twisty I couldn't follow it. So if you could just use the language of the state, that would be great, and we wouldn't have any questions.
And I think you alluded to that when we met, that our refund policy for the school. So.
Yeah, so if you would fix that. And actually, your refund policy is one of the longest that we see. So at some point, you might want to think about it and maybe look how some other schools do it and take it out a little bit. Because it's usually like a page and an eighth, and you've got seven. So,
yeah,
not so good. And in a whole bunch of it, you say a whole bunch of stuff, and then you say, but it's subject to the refund policy below, so I'm wondering why you're saying all that stuff if it's all subject to the same refund policy anyway. So I wouldn't require you to change it, but it would behoove you to be less confusing.
Yes, I looked at it, and I thought, I have a master's degree, and I went through it, and I thought, wow, this is...
And I have 40 years of school experience, and I had a hard time.
Yes.
On the EA, which where the refund policy is a bit shorter, it's only 5 pages. You mentioned about the you word even differently about the 3-day thing, but still not good.
And then in section two, you say, in no case is a refund available to a student whose completion percentage is equal to or exceeding 50, and you must give a refund when it's equal to 50. And then below, you say more than 50, but your wording is not the same. So if you would fix that, that would be lovely. And your three-day cancellation thing is both in your EA and in your catalog. And you have different requirements for the different programs, which makes sense, admissions requirements. But you weren't very uniform about saying if there's an age requirement, and it's, I think it's helpful for people to have that right up front. So for every one of your programs, if there's an age limit, say it. So some of them, there's no age limit listed at all. Others, you do have it. So it would behoove you to go through and clarify. And some of them, you say you want a copy of the high school diploma, GED, college grade report. But if you accept homeschooling and such like that, you might want to put in something like or equivalent, again, just to cover yourself. So if I were you, I would just go back through each program and just think about what your admission requirements are. Anything that can be uniform, you can put it in the same order, you know, age, credentials, whatever, so that anything that's different for each program maybe, you know, makes it easier to follow. I mean, I was like spreading all these out on my desk trying to figure out what you were doing. Like one of them, you don't have to be 16, but you ask for a copy of the high school diploma. Most 16-year-olds don't. But if you're saying, hey, if you're a superstar and you graduated at 16, cool, you can come, that's fine, but just make sure you meant to do that. Because lots of times if you're accepting people who are 16, you might not be requiring high school. So again, just make sure you're doing what you mean to do. All these pages are just all different programs, and they're all just worded differently. So, that's it.
I've exhausted mine.
Did I cover all yours?
No, I don't. I focused on two specific.
She's admitting she did not read your
application. I read this. Look, I even have a green tag. Please look. See, look. There you go.
I'm pretty hurt about that, too. I just want to know that hurts my feelings.
I'm being honest.
Well, I went through with a fine-tooth comb, so you got your money's worth.
Well, I feel only half neglected, though.
You don't want any more attention from me.
She's busting me out in front of everybody.
You busted yourself.
I told you, there is no love on this board.
Okay, that's all I
got. I make a motion that we approve the supplemental license application for change of ownership for Arizona Medical Training Institute.
Okay, motion, do we have a second?
Including maintaining $15,000.
All the revisions are just...
Including...
The refund ones have to be done. At least the conflict of the 50%.
Okay. Not a problem.
Okay. We have a motion and a second?
Third.
Do you agree to the conditions?
Yes. And we said 15,000 surety bond, right?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Yes, I agree. Yes.
Thank you.
All
those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Go forth and edit your time.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody. I appreciate it.
All right.
At 4:30. I know you're going to do one more.
Images.
Next one is images.
I don't think you have any notes anymore.
No, I don't.
Yeah, you have about 3 minutes, so.
I don't have any notes.
Okay. So we're now doing a supplemental license application for change of ownership for Images Enterprises, LLC.
Yes, Madam Chairman, members of the Board. Images Enterprises has been licensed by the Board since January of 2014. Mr. Collins joined Images in 2015 and added truck driving as a program, and as you know, this is not under our jurisdiction. Ms. Fisher has now purchased Mr. Collins' interest. Mr. Collins has resigned his position as manager and statutory agent. Mr. Collins also converted his personal loan to Images to his capital contribution account, and so now Ms. Fisher will be the sole member, and the truck driving program has no longer will no longer be offered through campuses. Here representing the institution is Jackie Fisher, board member Lee Trish, and Dr. Mitten for financials. I don't understand the capital contribution for.
Maybe you can explain that.
I actually wanted that to go first because I didn't understand it either, so that way we could just put that to bed.
I will do that.
Capital contribution, is that what you're looking for?
Yeah, or do you want to make a statement?
I started this actually owning a company called American Career Training, which was a truck driving school. And I had a history beyond that with Southwest Truck Driver Training. I asked Kevin to join me about 2 years ago so that we can develop the CDL program. CDL program, and we opened up Phoenix. Opening up Phoenix has cost, our budgeted amount was about $100,000 to open up Phoenix. And our budgeted amount for CDL program was about $100,000, and they both came at the same time. Okay. It caused some being bad, but didn't really put us heavily into the negative, maybe $5,000 or $6,000 is it. Since Kevin's departure, we have made drastic changes. So our inventory has increased because we now have inventory in Tucson and Phoenix. We are now approved in all of the government agencies and accept all of the grants in 40 different entities in Phoenix. So we have a really large class, actually, accounting class going on right now. Days and nights, and I'm teaching it here. So it's pretty exhausting. Our fixtures and equipment has increased by double because we now have Tucson, we now have Phoenix. Our vehicles have also doubled because we have purchased our own equipment instead of leasing, so our leasing expenses are decreasing. And our insurance has decreased. We are no longer leasing. If you notice in my financials, my compilated financials, the rent has decreased by $800 a month in Tucson. And in Phoenix, we have decreased it by $1,000 a month. Plus, we don't have to insure that additional lot over there for the CDL. So we saved ourselves $15,000 a year just in that change. Payroll has decreased. I no longer have to keep a staff for Phoenix for a CDL. I do still have Tucson CDL going. We have a contract that we have to hold out with. We accepted a grant, and we have to fulfill that grant. We have 1 year to do that and support $1 million. So we do still have a CDL program, but the difference is now I have days, I have nights. A new class starting every 2 weeks with the CDL program. And I estimated that we would be in the red after the departure of Kevin well into next year, and I'm happy to tell you as of today we are no longer in the red at all company-wide. So a lot of hard work, a lot of cutbacks is what we've accomplished. As far as the contributions, when Kevin bought it for me, he bought it for $50,000. Okay, that was me personal, and it was done between the CPAs and the attorneys. It did not affect the school whatsoever. It was not on the school's financials. Okay. I just simply put that money in a savings account. I have worked with Kevin for a long time. He is the owner of Eagle, which is kind of like a subcontractor for Warner Enterprises. So I've known him for many, many years in the trucking industry. So I just kind of held it there. I knew that at some point in time he may want to move on. He also used to own HDS and EIT. When he decided that he wanted to leave the company and open up his own truck school, which was in June, I gave him back $30,000. Again, that did not affect the school whatsoever. It was simple, here you go, here's my cash out of my personal account. I received it cash into my personal, I gave him back cash out of my personal. So it didn't affect the school at all. We are, like I said, fulfilling the contract through Goodwill for the grant. And I don't know if I'm going to keep the truck driving program. To tell you the truth, it's very profitable right now. You know, it's netting over $100,000. So not sure if I'm going to get rid of that.
Did that answer the question about the $22,000? It was an interesting story, but it didn't really seem to answer the question that was asked.
I guess the question was it ever on the company's books at all?
Never.
So how do we even know about the $22,000?
Yeah, and why do you call it a capital contribution account if it wasn't into the company's, it was personal?
Are you looking at the CPA report, or?
It's personal loan to EIT.
Yeah, I
think
it was.
Now, we did have personal loans to the school, but that had nothing to do with our transaction of selling.
It's under the narrative summary of the major terms of the agreement. It's over section 7.
Yeah, I just...
I couldn't follow it.
Ms. Fisher purchased a 50% membership in EII from Kevin Collins with a purchase price of $30,000. Mr. Collins shall convert his personal loan to EII in the amount of $22,000 to his capital contribution account and resign his position as manager and statutory agent.
Okay, so
this
is contrary to what you just said.
Capital. So the capital is his personal loan is $5,000 here, $2,000 there. We want to buy a forklift. It's, $6,000. It's throughout a period of time of maybe 4 months there. And so that's the difference. So they moved. He said, instead of paying me back that loan, just give me the $30,000 of the $50,000 that I initially, Edward Dunn, just move it over. So what the CPAs did is... again, Kevin's 50 to me originally, and my 30 back to him had nothing to do with the school. The loans that him and I made, because we made loans to open up Phoenix and we made loans to open up the CDL program, those loans, as we went, say paying rent for Phoenix, we had to pay rent for 8 months before we were completely approved in Phoenix. So say it was rent to Phoenix, those were loans to the company, okay? And he's saying that move it over to capital contributions is what they did. They just moved it over from loan over to the capital.
So was it ever on the balance sheet of the company before he left? Because I think that's the question here. It's not reflected anywhere on either the balance sheet for 2016 to 2017.
It happened within the first few months. We didn't open up
first few
Phoenix
months,
of this year.
2017.
Yeah.
And so, but it never existed as a liability.
Correct.
Books.
Well, until now. So.
But this was stuff that he bought.
So you have here your compilated financials from the CPA up to. That was 2016. We didn't open until 2017.
Right.
So, it was December. So we had to pay first and last month's rent.
Right.
Kevin and I both put in $25,000. Said, okay, this is what we're going to put in, $25,000 each. Let's pay the rent. Let's get everything going in Phoenix. And that's what it is.
Right. And so, ideally, and I don't think it materially changes what we need to do here, but I would imagine it would be on your balance sheet for this fiscal year because that's when it took place, right? That there would be some kind of liability for the $22,000 that you discharged in June.
Right. They had wrote it off. Actually, the departure happened prior to June, but he had made it to be dated June 30th. For his financial stuff on his end. So, yes, you're correct. It was a loan. He moved it, and I believe the CPA moved it to member equity.
But he's not a member anymore. That's
there's a huge member equity here. But if he's not a member, that would mean it's just you.
It makes no sense.
Yeah.
What are we asking?
Wait, at what point wasn't he a member? July 1st or June?
It just seems like there were several financial transactions going back and forth between you and Kevin and this and that, and they're not reflected anywhere.
This financials they gave us looks like it's from November of 16. This happened after that.
We do our new financials.
But that was a balance sheet.
Next month.
Wasn't there a current one in there?
Yeah, there is one.
And it still didn't show.
I was just scrolling through.
You could say that the transaction for you giving him the money outside of the business, right, the $30,000 is outside the business. But in actuality, it's not because there's a capital contribution somehow that's on the books because of that transaction.
That's what's confusing. The way the CPAs did it is they actually paid taxes on that $50,000 as personal income. He bought my interest in the school at 50%. We were 50-50. So he bought my interest for $50,000 for 50% of the interest is right. The way they worded it. I did get a 1099. I did pay taxes on it. It never entered the books.
That's the problem. You have all sorts of transactions going in and out that are not even being reflected on these financial statements.
So that's the reason why you're looking at the sell agreement, though, and you're wondering what's going on with the sell agreement.
I'm just wondering why it doesn't. You had a major financial transaction that, and you've got detailed financial statements, and the transaction isn't reflected in the statements at all.
But yet you say it's part of the capital contribution account.
I suspect it probably will next month. Next month is our auditing month, our in-house auditing, and we start a renewal license. It probably will all affect all of that. This financial prior was November last year.
This is unaudited, what we have here. And so we could request an updated financial statement that accurately reflects the
Being that they cost me $10,000, can we just wait till the end of next month for that?
Because I have to do it anyway
at the end of next month. So,
are you in your January cycle?
Mm-hmm.
Her renewal is due November 1st. So you could postpone this and refer both the change of ownership and the renewal to go before you in January with current financial statements, for lack of a better word.
Whatever the CPA statement.
Yeah.
Well, those are the weirdest.
If your fiscal year ends December 31st, how long will it take to have your audit completed?
We usually conduct an in-house audit next month, and we're audited by four different entities. So we do an in-house audit next month. We usually get everything to the CPA by the end of next month. Takes 2 weeks for him to turn it around. So you're talking about mid-December.
Okay.
And we usually have it submitted.
Okay. So
by the first, right?
That would work to come back in January and please have the financial statements accurately reflect the transaction.
That has the added bonus of the comments that I have about your catalog, enrollment agreement, et cetera. I'll provide them and write it to Ms. Sandfeld. She'll provide them to you. And you can just update them, and then maybe we won't have to have a conversation come January. And if you would, I noticed that you didn't include your resume here, and you made a note saying we already had it. When you submit things, you have to submit the complete thing. We're not going to dig an old application to pull something forward. So when you submit in January, it has to have everything. Even if it's the same as what you gave before, you need to give a complete
Just
document.
My resume, or do you need whole staffs?
Just yours.
Just mine.
All right, then in that case, I make a motion that we postpone and combine the change of ownership with the renewal application.
Second.
Do you have any questions?
With the condition that you get the audited.
The audited finishes will come with it.
It'll are they actually it. CPA audited when yeah. your lingo
They're
and
not
CPA
audited.
Lingo
CPA compiled financials.
Okay, that's not an audit. So So
it goes compiled, reviewed, and audited.
Exactly. But you've been throwing out their audit, so I mean,
we conduct an in-house audit.
Who is we, and for what agencies?
Well, the MVD, third-party testing, does in-house audits, and then we also have to create. Me and my staff have to create audits in order to report to Arizona Works now. They need to know how many passed, how many went to work, the whole shebang, what they're earning. So we do it all at one time, and we compile this big list.
Could CPA prepare compile CPA correctly compile. Reflecting all the in and out?
All right, so we have a motion and a second. Any other comments?
Second. No, you got a second already. Sorry.
Didn't we have a second?
Who was the second?
Yeah. All right, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion carries. We will see you at 3 The last one. Do we have any sort of like an award or something to give these people?
We'll take it.
Did you at least go get lunch?
There's more than we got.
Yeah. Yeah. We didn't
get that at all.
Actually, I lost track here that we have. That was in there. Let's check out. All right. So, Advanced Permanent Cosmetic Academy.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the board, Advanced Permanent Cosmetic Academy is seeking a non-accredited vocational program to offer a permanent cosmetic technician program. Ms. Golightly also owns another permanent makeup school that is licensed in Illinois. And representing the institution, there's more than... Which one of you are Erin? Erin. And are you...
I'm Joanne.
Joanne. And are you Mr. Weddings?
I am.
Whoa, you flew here from Illinois.
Well, you got your money's worth since you have to stay all day.
You know, with the change in weather, it was a no-brainer.
In the bomb shelter. All right. Oh, would you like to make
Trish is your lead. Ms. Leonard. Sorry.
Ms.
Ms.
Madam
Chair.
Madam Chair.
Would you like to make an opening statement?
No, not really.
No blame you. All right, then I have my list of questions. You ready?
Okay.
All right. What is the pass rate of your Illinois students for the CPCP exam?
The CPCP exam? Actually, it is the Association of Permanent Cosmetics Professionals. It's a worldwide association. Like doctors have their medical association. This is our largest association. So they actually do the testing, and they can do it at our facility.
Could you get the results from it?
Do we get the pass or fail, and then they're allowed to retake if they do.
So that's my question is, what is the pass rate of your students at your other school for that exam?
Well, I'm not exactly sure because we don't actually, they hold it at our location. I don't actually.
They don't give you the results. The cosmetology board sends to the school the results each month of the pass rate for their students. This exam does not, they don't give you feedback to let you know if your students pass
the CPCP is optional. It's different from our program.
I understand.
Oh, okay.
But in all your materials, you talk about how your program prepares people for this exam. You host the exam on your site, so you talk a lot about this exam. You have another school, so you're coming to Arizona, but you already have existing business experience.
Oh, okay.
So I'm trying to figure out how good of a school do you have in Illinois.
Okay, so...
Do your students pass that test?
Yes. So the ones that take it, all of them pass it.
You had 100% pass rate of the students who took it?
Our students that have taken it.
That was a much harder.
Sorry,
but that has been a long day. So originally, it said you expected 18 students in 2017, but that you originally did this application in January. So I'm assuming you are revising your numbers. So you're not thinking you're going to get 18 students from now to December 30th.
Probably not. No.
So math. Everywhere, almost everywhere in your materials, it says that this is a 100-hour program that is 1 week long. That is unbelievably mean and pretty impossible to do 100 hours in 1 week.
We did break for lunch. We do a lot of, this is very common in this industry, and for a lot of women who have families and children, and they really prefer condensed training. And we broke it down to our 2 days of theories, which is 20 hours, our 3 days of practical, which is 30 hours, and our 35 hours of home study, and our 2 days of on-the-job training, which is 15 hours, and that is the 100-hour.
And you're getting it done. A week is a seven-day period. So from Sunday to Saturday, mm-hmm. they are literally getting 100 hours done.
And they really do prefer to have this done in a week.
It's intense.
And it is common for this. It's pretty much the protocol for this industry.
More than 13 hours in a day, every day for 7 days.
And you say it's from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there is some additional homework that they take home with the practicing, with the practicals.
And you're counting that as far as the 100 hours?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's acceptable.
The homework they're including in the 100 hours.
Yeah,
so
sure.
They're saying that that's part of the 100.
Yes.
Right. If we get complaints from students that you are not literally, factually giving them 100 hours, we will go so hard against you for doing it, because I personally believe that cannot be an accurate statement, particularly because elsewhere in your catalog you say it's 10 days. So your VA says it's 1 week, your catalog says it's that it's 10 days. So I can be promising something that
Whoa.
You're not going to give. And obviously he thinks so too. He's making noise about it.
Now this is accurate. This is what we're doing.
Where are the lab and independent study hours conducted?
In the office. In our academy.
The independent hour, do you have like a clinic?
Yes.
Okay.
Hey, on your website, it says makeup by Erin. Are you the only technician at both locations?
No.
You are the teacher?
I am the lead trainer.
Okay. So are clinic customers used as part of the training?
I'm sorry. Could you repeat that?
Are the, if I go there, I go on the website and I click, I want makeup by Erin. Are you going to use me as a model for your students?
Oh, no.
Okay. So that 100 hours, are you doing that 100 less the homework? Are you doing that teaching, that whole 100 hours?
Mm-hmm.
So you're not seeing clients during that time?
No, only in the 2 days of on-the-job training. So they're shadowing us in our office while we're doing the exact same, what we've been learning while I'm working on my clients. 2 days of that.
So if I went online and clicked to have you fix me up, students would be observing.
I always ask the clients, and that's an option, and I've only been turned down once. And so they know that we're also a training academy.
And it goes to one of the other teachers mm-hmm. with her client.
So it was a little hard to follow on your website. Are you here or in Illinois or both?
I'm here full time.
So someone would click Makeup by Erin in for an appointment in Illinois?
No, I'm just doing the training. The only time that I do any clients in Illinois at this point is when I am back there for training. So I have one training week. Otherwise, I'm only taking clients here.
And you're not teaching in Illinois?
I do fly back and teach 1 week a month.
The CPE test, do your instructors administer the test, or you're just housing it? You're letting them use your space?
No, the trainers all have to take the exam. They all have to be CPE.
No, they're giving it. Giving the test.
Oh, they are not in-house. They come in.
A suggestion for your entry requirements, high school diploma, GED, add-in, or equivalent? Cover your bases, you can allow a homeschooler and state tests, etc. Is the kit purchased, provided to, as part of the tuition? Is it purchased separately?
Part of the tuition.
It's part of the tuition.
Mm-hmm.
So when you apply the refund, it is to the entire tuition and kid, the whole thing, the refund would be applied against. Because there's no mention in the EA or the refund policy of what happens with the kit. So I think you should clarify that the kit is provided as part of the tuition. The enrollment agreement, add initials to each page. Since it's a multi-page document they're signing, you add the initials so they're initialing each page. Later you can prove that they did, when they signed the last page, that they enrolled in. I'm just assuming that 100 hours jammed into a week, something's going to happen, somebody's going to be late, ill, something. How do they make up the hours or handle an absence?
They can come back and work with one of the instructors.
So it says there's only one test, no quizzes. I assume that there are other ways of monitoring whether these people are understanding it before they just get to the end and it's do or die. Mm-hmm. I didn't think it was all that clear. It's in the catalog page 2. It seems like it would be good to give some explanation of how during that 100 hours, if a person's not doing well after 10 hours, you let them go the entire 90 and then fail them, you know, how would you judge that they're, you know, not up to par?
Yeah, and they do come back. We've only had 2 students in our history that we've had to have come back because we didn't feel it was satisfactory, but we worked with them. And we worked on extra life models with them until we felt it was satisfactory.
It just seems you want to make sure that that's being done during the program and not just, you know, just saying, hey, we have one test at the end. Just feels like you're putting in 100 hours, killing yourself, doing all this, you know, 20 hours a day, and then you get to the end and you fail.
Yeah, we are judging as we go, too.
And you have a section in the catalog that says probation, and then nothing in the section discusses probation. So either take probation out, because that's not really what you're talking about, or explain what you mean. That's it. Anyone can top that?
No, ma'am.
And we'd love to have you come and visit.
What they're saying is, I covered everything they already had on their list.
That's true.
Did we do a site visit?
Yes.
Okay.
Back in January, February.
Did you quiz them and ask them if they're doing 100 hours?
No, Keith went.
I was minding my own business. Didn't you notice Keith had a little
See, he slid out. He didn't want to face me asking that question. All right, any other? Did you want to say something?
No.
No. Sorry. All right, then. I make a motion to approve the conditional vocational program license application with the stipulation that a $15,000 surety bond is maintained.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Do you agree to the stipulation? Yes, ma'am.
Your revisions?
And revisions? My revisions were suggestions and complaints, but not requirements.
Okay.
Thank you.
Still means I want to see
Don't say thank you, because you'll have to see her next year if you don't fix them.
I'm less kind, girl. Okay, we have a motion and a second. They have accepted the stipulation, so all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Just aye.
I said aye.
Everybody.
Thank you.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Have 911 available for people doing 100 hours in a week. I think you might need to know that number.
That's
for yourself
That's
as well.
That's brutal.
They need more makeup by the end of the week. That's why you're doing it, right?
Thank you very much.
Call to the public, Fred.
Bye.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Fred. Thank y'all. Seriously, you guys are on. Gotta go. Was this like the longest one ever, though?
No.
Not
ever.
Okay.
No.
Had to be close.
It's real close.
We went to
close.
6.
It's very close.
But this time we brought food, except
we went to 5:20.
Because Paul, you know, he's dying over there.
This is what I've had all day.
Well,
2 cups of coffee.
Do you want
all right, see y'all.
Thank you.
To pass that.
Hi. Executive Director's Report.
I have nothing to add.
All right. We all read it.
Yeah.
Adjournment. I make a motion to... Yes?
I'm just waiting for your...
Make a motion to adjourn at 4:58.
Oh, yeah.